So my journey through the league is equivalent to, imagine you're at a roulette table, and there's obviously black and red, but then there's that green one at the top that's like the double zero, that really hard one to hit. Imagine you walked up and you were like, "I'd like $100 on green." And then they were like, "You mean like black?" "No, no, green." And you were like, "I want it." And then it hits, and everyone at the table looks at you like you're crazy. And you're like, "Whoa." And you go, "Do it again." About those odds, maybe one more spin of the green, and that's about the probability of the path I went through.
You are now listening to the Duo Sports and Stuff podcast. Here are your hosts, Deontay Epps and Dane Beasley.
Hello and welcome to episode 42 of the Duo Sports and Stuff podcast. My name is Deontay Epps, joined by my brother, my best friend, my ace, the other half of the duo, Dane Beasley. Dane, how you doing, my guy?
Doing pretty well. It's a fabulous day, I might say. Fabulous day.
Most definitely. And before we introduce our next guest, yes, we have another guest. I'd like to remind you guys to subscribe to the Duo of Sports and Stuff podcast. Give us a great rating on Apple Podcasts. Get more ears to the duo. So we appreciate that. And we are joined by our high school teammate forever, our guy. From Killeen High School, West Texas A&M.
Yes, sir.
Spent some years in the NFL. Our guy, Craig Wash Jr. How you doing, bro?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. Thank you guys for having me, man. I've been looking forward to catching up with my boys for a hot minute now. So it's good to finally get a chance to sit down.
Hey, Dane, I don't know if I told you this, but maybe like a month and a half ago, I texted Craig with the idea of coming on, and he basically said, "It's about damn time." I was like,
"Yeah, like I'm just gonna blame it on that guy over there."
Oh no, man! Y'all got more important fish to fry. Y'all got more. I figured I'd make it on one of the weeks where it was a little backlog. So I'm gonna give y'all a hard time, man. You guys are y'all are doing great work, man. And I'm honored to be here, man. I really am.
We appreciate you, man. So we talked about you back in Killeen, back in the 08, 09 days. Man. What year did you come in? Because you didn't come in a freshman, right?
So I moved from San Antonio at the end of our freshman year. So like y'all had finished spring ball and everything. And I got in like right then and there. And then so that next year in our sophomore year, if I'm not mistaken, we were all on maroon team as sophomores, weren't we?
Yeah. I think we'd always been on maroon.
Yeah, I think we did. We played JV those 2 years together. Or did one of y'all get moved up before us? Before me?
Not me.
But okay.
He definitely had the opportunity. But Deontay screwed right, the
Craig,
pooch on that.
I don't know if you remember this, bro. I'm about to tell the story. All right, here it goes. So going into our junior year, preseason game, we saw we play Leander.
Yeah.
So I had the opportunity. I had the chance. This is funny. The JV guys, we play most of our snaps with JV to start the year. But a select number of players got a chance to play with the varsity reps. And Coach Hawkins, and I know he's going to listen to this episode. So yeah, Coach Hawk, I remember.
Shout out, Hawk.
Remember this. But he put me in during the varsity reps and I think it was a non-route, maybe. I either got tangled up or something. I didn't end up getting the ball. Yeah. I didn't catch it. And at that point, my dad is crazy. He used to always push.
What?
Hey. Like, what? Why didn't you get no chance? Why didn't you get no chance to be on varsity? So go ahead.
Well, I just thought about it because it's funny you mentioned your dad. Your dad is still a staple in some of my inside jokes to this day. You remember in the Victory Bowl, that big lineman, Mark?
Yeah, yeah, you went to school with him.
Yeah, yeah, we all went to school together. To this day, he'll walk up and be like, "Hey, what can I get for free?" and we told that all the time. You told me that story one time. I told him that story, and he mentions it all the time now. I'm like, "Oh yeah, that's Mr. F right there. He gonna get his come up."
My dad's gonna love this to hear this episode in like 3 weeks.
Yeah,
he's always like three episodes behind.
That's because he just consumed. He listens twice.
What's funny, he just went out of town to East Texas, and that's like the real time where he can listen to the podcast.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, "Yeah, man, I just heard the, I think the Marcus Spears.
Oh, maybe that's that one.
Maybe it was Coach Mosey one, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so funny because he's always behind, though. Like, but back to the story, something with the catch. I want to say it was a catch or a pass or something thrown to me. And we're in the film room next day or whatever. And Coach Hawkins was in there.
Oh, yeah. We knew it was coming, too.
And he literally turns to me and says, in front of everybody, "Tell your daddy he had a chance to be on varsity." And I'm like, bro. Like, damn, man.
You were the one, Deontay.
Tell your dad.
You were supposed to be the one. You were supposed to be the one. We're all rooting for you. And
like,
then
not crazy, but you know, like the kid wanted to be on varsity. Yeah, you know.
I'll say it's funny, man. Looking back at Killeen, I didn't realize how good we were collectively. Like, we had a lot of talent on that team, you know what I mean? So it's like, it's wild that like that you know, was good as you were, you still were like, "I can't even get on varsity my senior year." You know what I mean? So it's like,
my junior year.
Yeah, well, I'm saying you had your chance your junior year, but we didn't make it.
Oh, he had a big chance.
Shut up, Dan. Yeah,
but there was some killers in there. We had Fuson was still up 1 year. Like the team was good, you know.
TJ, J. Ross.
Yeah, we had them all.
Oh yeah,
shoot,
had talent.
Mike Frank.
I will say for the Killeen folks that do turn in. Killeen hasn't went that far since quarterfinals.
The standard, man.
Can we get a better for that?
They'll make it back.
So quarterfinal game is funny. That's another one of my staple quotes is anytime.
I already know what you're talking about. Go ahead.
Anytime I
you got to break your fingers, though.
Hey, if something doesn't happen good, I walk up all the time. I go, "Hey, they can score 35 in one half. We can score 35 in one half." And I just walk out the room. I'll never forget Coach acting like we was going to come back in that game. I was like, "This is the end of the road, Chief. We're going to go to CC's and have memories after this."
But that bus ride home was so sad. Then we got to CC's and turned up.
We were there for 10 minutes. They're like, "All right, we good.
It was like, "Ah, we good now. Y'all ready for this 2-hour lunches? Let's get it."
right. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, man.
But it was a small glimmer of hope in me that thought we were going to try to come back and eventually someone to write a book about it. And then, of course, adapt it in some sort of whitewashed Disney movie. But like Travis had other plans.
Look, man, I'm going to keep it 100 right now. I have, as a lineman my whole career, I've never felt like I had the ability to really change the outcome of a game. And so I've always been very, very transparent with how I thought the day was going to go.
Yeah.
I've never been somebody over. I've never been overly. Like that. Yeah, I've never been like, "Oh, no, we got the." No, they're good. Okay. And we didn't show up today. That's just how it's going to be. Somebody, we taking this L. Hey, there was no way I was like, "Don't worry, guys. If we all strap up and we put our
like
best
foot..." generic football players.
We're all in this together.
Like, no. Yeah.
What's so funny to this day, like, you know how in the fourth quarter when the teams, they hold up the four, like, Karina's like, "Why did they do that?"
Yeah.
I'm like, "I don't know. It's just a football thing." Like,
I don't know.
The football gods like it.
Yeah. Gets the people
now,
going.
Now, hey, remember how we was trying hard the first three quarters? Where we really got to bring it this one. Like, I've never understood it. But yeah, it's, you know, it's funny. I was actually, it's funny, speaking of football, now that I'm like on the other side of the ball, like after you like are coaching now, mm-hmm. it's crazy how you see stuff completely different.
Yep.
Like, it's just wild being on the other side of the ball. And you're like, why was I doing that? That was stupid. I'm like, why was I? like trying to be nice to every coach you pass yeah. because you think that somehow that'll factor
that
in.
That could be your opportunity.
Yeah. And meanwhile, you're like, I didn't see any of your film. You're not even in my position group, bro. Like, you know, so it's funny how many things are like that. But yeah, man.
So after we lost that playoff game in the quarterfinals to Lake Travis, people had opportunities to go to play at the next level. What offers did you get besides West Texas A&M?
Oh, man. So so coming out of high school, so after we played Lampasas, I went out. I don't know if y'all remember. I didn't come to film. I wasn't at, like, workouts the next day. I went out to El Paso.
You know I don't remember that, Craig.
Well, so just in case you didn't know,
just saying, no, I'm saying,
I was on a recruiting trip.
Well, we it was an 11-hour drive. It was they didn't fly me out.
And, picked me up in a limousine.
No. It was I had El Paso had asked me to come out on like an unofficial. Went out there, and then everything was like supposed to be good. Like they had like a tentative offer kind of on the table, mm-hmm. and. I'll never forget, this dude's name was Willie Frazier. He was on the trip with me. He ended up decommitting from SMU to go to UTEP. So he got the scholarship. So I ended up getting a walk-on offer. And then, you know, our season ended. And then I had spent so much time hanging on to UTEP that I didn't really talk to anyone else. So by the time, like, signing day came around, I actually didn't have anybody. I was unlanded by the end of January. And so it was like January, probably like 25th or so. I was going out to track practice, and then I got a phone call from a coach at West Texas. And the only reason I even knew who it was because Jordan went there. Remember, Jordan Smith had been there a few years before. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, mm-hmm. I was like, who? You mean Texas A&M? But you don't want me. Ronte is over there, okay?
Did you mean to call Ronte?
You've got the wrong guy. So he came on a house visit, and he offered that. That was my very first offer. It was my I got offered $500 a semester to sign. And then I remember, I'll never forget, because we were joking about it the other day. I remember he was leaving my house, and he was like, look, you're probably going to get some other calls from some other schools in the conference. Don't pay them. They're going to throw big numbers at you, but you just got to think, look how much Abilene costs, okay? It doesn't matter if he gives you 10, like he's like going on this big spiel.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. All right. So sure enough, they actually like called the next day, and I was like, I didn't even really listen because I just remember being like, he told me he was going to call. I knew he was going to call, you know? And so I stuck with a couple more offers rolled in. I actually ended up double signing to play at Cisco and WT because, you know,
how does that
I
work?
Thought that, yeah. So great question, man. Because there's the NCAA and there's the NJCAA, they're technically under two different governing bodies. And so whichever one you appear at, the other contract is null and void.
Oh, okay.
And so because I was an academic qualifier, I double signed to both. So I signed to Cisco and WT with the hope that if a scholarship from a big school came up anywhere from signing day to the start of camp, that I would just go to Cisco, thus breaking my WT NLI, and then I would gray shirt their season and then go the spring and save time and go that way. So it was me being like, I'm still trying to get the most out of this, you know. But in hindsight, man, I'm so glad I didn't like do that because, I mean, you guys, as you know, obviously talking with Coach Mosley, with, you know, Lance Ashew, and, you know, obviously you guys must have, you know, did a lot of research with all that. It's a whole different, Duco life is.
It's a beast.
Tough.
You got to be about it. Yeah. And I remember going on a visit and just being like, I think I'm just going to go to Division II. I think I'll just go where I think I'm not going to get, you know. And so, so that was my like really one and only offer, man, was WT. I consider the other ones that trickled in like piggybacks, but they don't really count to me because it's like you really only were playing keep away. Like you weren't really interested in me. You were just trying to poach a player to stop someone else from getting them. And so I signed there and then, you know, went on to go up to West Texas.
Dane, do you remember the recruiting we had with Coach Fair talking about the opportunity?
Yeah.
I don't think we ever told Craig.
No,
a lifetime full of cut blocking. Like, I'm good.
What are you, with Howard Payne or something?
I'm good on it. No, he's trying to get us to go to, it was the Air Force, right?
Yeah. Air Force
the Academy. Academy?
Yeah, he's trying to get us to go to Air Force. Yeah. I was
he
like, man.
It hard, man. Like, I don't think we ever talked to the coach or anything, but like, he was just like, yeah, man, you know, Coach Fair. Yeah, man.
Such an opportunity, man. Just sign your name right here, man.
I'm not knocking Air Force, but I know you got to serve. So after you're done, like, I respect the troops, all the things they go through, but I'm not built like that. So, you know what I'm saying? So.
100%.
You already know I'm looking like
nope.
Bro, and here's the thing, man. I almost did the same thing.
I thought about it for like half a second.
Yeah, but then what? What stopped you?
I just thought about what practice would look like. Like what games would look like. Like, man, we really would just be there. I like blocking.
Yeah.
I love blocking, but just lifetime full of that. Like, man, like.
Bro, you know, man, it's. I'm glad. This is kind of serendipitous because, like, exactly what we're talking about now, I have tried to explain this concept to so many people. Like, I love football. I love the game. But there are so many times where it could have caused me to walk away. Like, if my only offer would have been, like, Georgia Tech, I'd have been like, I'm not running the wing. No, I'm not built for run blocking like that.
Exactly.
I'm a finesse pass blocker, okay?
And when you say Georgia Tech, I'm thinking like, how did Calvin Johnson get, bruh?
Just freak being athlete. 6'5".
He was
like,
a freaking
why did he go there?
Dog. Right,
but like,
better question.
he got his 5 touchdowns and 14 catches, and that's all they
14 catches for 395 yards. Yeah.
All on third down.
Right. Exclusively. We have no other options, though, to count it. I couldn't imagine, like there, you know, guys in like, not only the academies, too, not only you got to do football practice, you still got to do PT tests. You know, you still got basic training. Like it's more than I think I was built for. Like just like you said, I ain't built that way.
Right, built like that. Like
I'm a natural 320 pounds. There's no service lineman over 300. I would have been miserable.
You know, they agile, got to move constantly, cutting. Respect to those that do, but I ain't built like that.
Yeah.
Appreciate y'all like for protecting my freedoms.
So you're on campus at West Texas A&M, man. How was it your first few years? Like, you don't get put into the starting lineup, but what was that experience like?
Not good. So, all right, so I almost quit my first day. I'll never forget. So I showed up like literally the last orient. You know, you got to go to summer orientation and all that. I showed up at that last one with all the bad kids and the kids who like procrastinated. And we weren't supposed to go to that one because it overlapped with the very first practice. So like I go get my schedule. I'm like running out the practice. I'm already setting a bad impression. I'm only on $500 a semester. It's not like I'm some big recruit. Like I'm the last dude on the roster, you know. I get in, I'm like the sixth string right guard. I get in for like the last two reps and I'll never forget. I'm just like, okay, just don't F up. Like just look okay, you know? And the very last rep, the outside linebacker comes charging in full speed, dislocates my elbow, or my shoulder, excuse me. And I was like, this is not a good introduction to college ball. I was like, oh man. I've never had an injury my whole career, and it's day one, and I got a dislocated shoulder. So then I was like, what do I do about this? You know, like, they're like, well, You got to do your run test first before anything. And so I had to go do the conditioning test because I had missed that already, failed that miserably. Then I had to do the makeup condition. And so like, I'm talking like probably a mile's worth of running later with his hurt shoulder. I'm like, I can't, this is not for me. Like, I'm not going to stick, like, you know, but I remember thinking like, I can't quit, you know. I remember like, you know, when you're going through that senior season, you're thinking like, all I want to do is continue playing. I couldn't get to that point and then be like, it's too hard, phone it in, you know? And I'm too egotistical to be known as a quitter, you know? So I think just my pride was like, man, just stick it out, transfer at the end of the semester or something. And, you know, the fall, I had a good fall. And then I ended up traveling the last game of that year. And to answer your question, what is it like kind of being put into the lineup? For me, it was a self-actualization moment. You guys were talking about Coach Fair earlier, and Coach Fair, I'll never forget. There was this one time we were sitting in the, weight room, and he had walked by and he mentioned, he was like, you know, you have a chance to play at the next level. And I was like, bro, I got like 1 year of high school. Like I'm a 1 year varsity player. Like that's not how recruiting, you know, just being pessimistic. And he was the very first person that ever like, you know, mentioned it as a thing that's more than just like positive words you tell somebody, you know, like, you know, in my mind, it was just coaches who say nice things. That's their job. And going through that semester, rising through the ranks and being, you know, going from like I said, sixth to second team and traveling by the end of the year, it was validating, and it told me like, okay, you're not just a body that they need. You're not just, you know, out here to make friends, you know, because for me, football was really just a way to be social, moving around. It was always a way to not be the new awkward kid. And so
it was, yeah, and you were a military kid too, mm-hmm. So you moved often a lot. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. So for me, sports was just my way to bridge the awkwardness with kids. And so now getting to the point where I was like, oh man, like I'm playing, like even though it was still Division II, like I was like, I'm playing college football, you know? And so for me, it was like to be put in that position, it told me that I am capable of it. And it kind of like set the new road for how I saw work and the grind and, you know, committing to a craft, because if my sorry self could make it, you know, well, let's see what happens if I really put down, you know, full commitment and effort.
Yeah, that makes sense. So coming out of college, of course, you're coming out of small school in West Texas A&M. What was that kind of moment in your mind, kind of similar what you were talking about there, where you're like, I might have a chance to play beyond college?
Oh, all right, this one's a story. This is a whole.
Oh, you so got time.
Y'all ever play roulette?
Or, I was talking about that today.
Gamble, you ever gamble?
I'm more of a blackjack guy, but I'm familiar with it.
So
I've put money in the stock market.
Dane is crypto. Yeah, Dane is crypto now.
You a Doge boy? You a Doge boy?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
Hey.
Yes, I am. Right in the
moon. Hey, I see
yeah.
you.
Yeah, I'm trying.
Hey, I'm with you, Chief. I'm right there with you. So I remember the very first. It's crazy how, like, I can't remember a lot of stuff, but there are these weird moments that are, like, these crystallizing, like, especially in hindsight, I'm like, oh, okay. So my journey through the league is equivalent to, imagine you're at a roulette table, and there's obviously black and red, but then there's that green one at the top that's, like, the double zero, that really hard one to hit. Imagine you walked up and you were like, I'd like $100 on green. And then they were like, you mean like
yeah.
black? No, green. And you were like, I want it. And then it hits. And everyone at the table looks at you like you're crazy. And you're like, whoa. And you go, do it again. About those odds, maybe one more spin of the green. And that's about the probability of the path I went through. And so... this is two stories in one. So I remember the very first time I thought somebody had even a sniff of a chance is when a scout came to talk to me. And not about someone else. Because, like, I'd had scouts come up and be like, hey, tell me about Brian Braman. Hey, tell me about, you know, Ethan Westbrook. And I'm like, oh, I blocked that guy in practice. He's good, you know. And so for the first time they came and they were asking about me. And I was like, you got the right me, you know. Like, you sure you're talking? So that was, like, the first moment where I was like, okay, they don't just talk to people for no reason. Like, they don't care about – this isn't college where – when the scouts come around in college, they're like, you know, it's buddy, buddy. Hey, man, what's up? We can't wait to get you. Mm-hmm. There is no love at the other level because now the dynamic has changed. You need them. So they don't care about your happiness at all. It's just like, you know. And so I remember after we finished the season, I remember sitting my senior season. I remember sitting in history or my political science class with Dr. Welch. And I remember like being like the superlative should come out today, you know, like the all conference awards. And we were like somewhere in the region by now. We were still playing ball. And I remember the all region team came out and I made first team all region. And then I had valuable players came out. And I ended up winning offensive lineman of the year. And that was like the moment where like, I was like, oh, okay. All right. That's not, cause everyone who had won that award previously ended up having a shot. Like if you look at the list of people who won the award, everybody made it to a camp at least. And so I was like, whoa, like I fanboyed out for a whole minute. Cause like, I looked up to all these guys, you know, like if I could just be in the conversation, I thought that'd be dope, you know. And then a few weeks later, I ended up making first team All-American as well. And then I was like, yo, like, okay, all right, I got, because when you're a D2 guy, you got to run to what other guys walk to, you know. So I knew I needed to have all of this stuff in my pocket to, you know, put my best foot forward. And so it was like kind of coming together. And then I still hadn't had an agent, though. That's how I knew I wasn't really big time. I was like, hey, nobody want to represent me. I mean, I'm so out here. I'm about – I guess that's not a good thing, you know.
Yeah.
And so I ended up getting all that stuff, getting put on. And then, you know, fast forwarding to – you know, this is probably jumping ahead a bit. But I remember the draft like it was like yesterday. Like that draft – I'll never forget draft day coming out because – you know, as consumers of the sport, you know, the draft is like, we getting people, new team, we got new players. Yeah. When you're in the suit, you like sweat. Never in my life have I wanted my phone to ring more. You know, how people be ducking bill collectors? It's the opposite of that day. You know, you're like, please, anybody, somebody call me, you know. And I remember that day. Remember Silence, that guy Terrence Allen? He was on our Victory Bowl team as well.
Yeah.
So we went to college as well, and ended up seven other guys on my team ended up making camp or getting contracts by the end of the day, and I was like the odd man out. Like even dudes who we didn't think would probably land somewhere, like kind of got on, and I was like,
"Come on!"
I was hurt, man. I was hurt, and because then I remember just being like. The only person who called me the whole day was my agent. And I was like, what are you calling for? And he's like, and he goes, hey, anyone called you? And I go, anyone called you?
Oh,
what you mean?
Like, you supposed to tell me.
And so I remember going to bed that night being like super depressed because like I didn't drop out of school. I had finished my first degree, but I left it open. So like I just walked off with like four Fs pending because I didn't withdraw. I was just like, I'll go train. If it doesn't work out, I'll come back to school later, you know. And so I remember when that didn't get it picked up right away, I was like, wow, that was stupid. Like, you know, like that didn't pan out like you thought it would. And so the next day my brother's driving me to the airport, my phone rings and like it just felt like that was the call. Like I was literally sitting like this with my phone on my chest. And then the phone rang, and I was like, all right.
Just like in the movie.
Just like a movie. It felt like I even said, I was like, am I allowed to say bad words?
Yeah, oh, of course.
I was sitting there, and I was like, about damn time. And I didn't know who it was, but I just picked up the phone and I was like, I don't know who this is, but y'all about to get this work. Hello. And it was some scout from San Diego. And they were like, we're going to offer you a rookie mini camp tryout. And are you guys familiar with what rookie mini is?
Break it down.
All right. I'm about to throw y'all with the inside. Okay. So you guys been seeing those things lately with all the teams who are issuing the not returning statements by the NFLPA, teams not going?
Oh, yeah. We talked about on our last pod. Yeah.
What that is teams not coming back to OTA 1. OTA 1 starts about this time every year. And it's like the phase where you're just like, you no football. You can't have 11 guys on the field at one time. Like all those silly rules.
Mm-hmm.
After that phase goes down, 2 weeks, and then that's when the draft hits. The draft and all the rookies will get picked up in that block of time. And then the next 2 weekends are called rookie mini camps. So the vets will still be in the building doing stuff, but the rookies have their own stuff where they're being brought along. So one of the weekends that the vets will get off, the rooks will come in. And let me back up a little bit. After the draft, let's say we're using, let's use your Broncos, right?
Go Broncos.
Let's say the Broncos.
Look at Dane's face.
let's say we use the Broncos, right? With their, 12 picks or whatever they have this year. I think it was the Eagles who had like 12 picks. But anywho. They'll pick up their 7 guys if they only have the 7, and then you sign your priority free agents. You usually have about 20 to 25 rookies on your team now. You can't conduct practice with only that many people. So they bring in rookie minis, which are tryout guys who were below the guys you've already signed, and they act as a filler to fill out practice.
Yeah, kind of like the practice squad.
Those guys are not even.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so it's literally called a tryout because they picked up the guys in free agency, but they need to look at other people too. So you literally come in just to practice and then you leave. Like most teams will have their rookie minis with the roster filled, right? So when I went, there were 90 guys under contract of the 90 available contracts. So all the rookie minis there had return flights home. So for me, it was like, all right, well, this is the in my mind, it was a sense of if I play well here in training camp, if something happens, they know of me, they have an awareness of me, I might get a shot later, And so we went to rookie mini. It's like a 3-day thing, and I end up. Man, it's funny. I always say like I want to write a book one day because it's like it's wild looking back at the story, like how like. Small everything was and how stressful the whole journey was. Cause like we get there, dude, there's 6 linemen. I'm number 6. Like, so the other 5 are the linemen who are playing. And I'm just back there like, the one guy out. And so I'm like, I can't even get in to prove myself if I'm the one odd lineman. And then eventually I get some more reps. And then, eventually I'm now in the first unit for the next day. And then I'm not 7 with the guy who ended up being my roommate for that camp. But, like, I end up taking his kind of job. And they fly us all home. And I'll never forget, I called my agent and I was like, hey, I think I had a good camp. Everything's going well. He goes, okay, are they going to sign you? And I go, well, no, they already had our flights booked home. Like, everyone's going home. And he's like, if they really like you, they keep you. And I'm like, why would you tell me that?
It's Captain Obvious here.
Help. Yeah.
Ow. So need some optimism.
Right? So I fly home and like 2 days later, I'm thinking like, okay, this is like May 25th. Oh, no, sorry. The day is actually May 20th when I go home. And I remember thinking like, okay, if anything happens good, it'll be July because no one's going to get hurt during OTAs, And I'm thinking like I needed like someone to blow a knee out or something. Like 2 days later, I'm sitting there like getting my hair done, and it's the director of player personnel, and he's like, "Hey, we're going to bring you in. We're going to sign you." And I'm like, "Oh, great! I guess I'll see you guys this summer." But I'm thinking that, you know. And he's like, "Okay, there's no flights out tonight. Can you be at the airport at 6 in the morning?" And I'm like, "Oh, sure, yeah." And I actually remember he goes. He heard, he could hear my voice. He goes, "That okay?" I go, yeah, you know. So, I just didn't think it was like, I was like, oh, okay. So I'll never forget. I got out there, went and did my medicals. And then after you do all that stuff, I remember asking a dude who's driving me around from the airport. I go, hey, who's my roommate? And he goes, oh, okay. He looks at the clipboard. And he goes, Jeremiah Searles. And I go, oh, man, that's like the one dude I got along with the most. I'm glad, like, you know, like we actually, you know, hang out. And he's actually a very good friend of mine to this day. And so I get to the hotel room and I walk in and he's like, hey, man, it's good to see you. And I'm thinking, it's like, you didn't expect to ever see me again. Let's start with that. And then, like, don't give me those formalities. It's just being nice because, you know. So then, but then I go, yeah, like, hey, man, it's good to see you too. And I'm like, you got a whole hotel room by yourself? Like, you got two queens? Like, what's going on here? And he goes, oh, no, Ian was my roommate. And Ian was this other guy who had been a camp with us. And I go, oh, okay. Well, where's Ian? And he's like, you're Ian. And it was like in that moment that I was like, okay, this is real now. For every success that I have means a direct non-success of another individual. You know, it's quite a zero summary game. And so being now moving into that arena, you know, I'd say the biggest things from like actualizing myself from high school to college and to college to, you know, the NFL was, well, one, the way you look at the game changes. And as you go higher, the kid-like joy is removed. And the very, very cut and dry XO end result product only takes over. But more so, I think what I noticed was at each point you get to the next level, you have to remember, it's kind of like if you're a boxing world champ, right? Like if you're the belt holder, everybody's coming at you with their best shot, their best performance. You can never take a break. Even though you'd like to because you think you've made it to the ultimate goal, it's actually more important now to double down on your intensity. And it was quite the same in the league where it's like, you know, in college, don't get me wrong, I'm not like a slack or anything. But once signing day was over, I was like, all right, these are the only people who can take my job. Like, this is a finite pool of competition. If I just beat the guys in this room, your boy is good. Not in the league. Every week they are trying people out. Every week you see transactions. Like, and it's so much more stressful that you're just like I remember my rookie year, man, not even joking. Every day I was just looking at the clock till one, because one is the close of business on the East Coast, which means that you can't be cut. So I'd be in the meeting room like
you were living day to day by the clock, like.
Yep. At least one year was like, I've never watched Hard Knocks because this show would give me anxiety because it's too familiar. Yeah. Like I've never seen an episode. In fact, that was my low key side note, but that was my biggest fear being in the league was that we'd get a like, please God, I don't want to be on Hard Knocks. I didn't want to be on Hard Knocks, and I didn't want to have a co-team scrimmage. Oh, yeah. Like when, like, you know, you go
play other teams.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get embarrassed while I'm trying to make a team. Get out of here. No.
Somebody always scrapping too. Always.
Yep, yeah. Man. Always. Helmets so coming off. Going
like
hand
the biggest adjustment was like, Corlin Finnegan. That was like the biggest adjustment though was the daily reminder of like you know, like it's to the point where you walk in and you're like, I don't recognize that big dude. Mm-hmm. Who is he? Where's he from? What's his name? Crap, I know that name. That's a good name.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like just, you know, little paranoid, you're just paranoid all the time. And so that was the biggest transition, was realizing that you can't slip, your margin for error is even smaller. You know, as you get up in the levels.
What year did you come in with the Chargers? 2014, 15? So
2014, yeah. I got signed, I want to say it was May of 2014.
So you talk about the early mini camp session. Was there a time where you got to interact with the bigger stars of the team? I can't remember if you're on that team with Phillip Rivers, of course, so, but I can't remember the rest.
Yeah, Phil was there. So that was one of, like, the – man, that for me was, like, a big – like a big eye opener, and it kind of so Nick Hardwick was there at the time too. Okay. Nick Hardwick is an all pro center, pro bowler. And Nick was a guy, I mean, granted, you guys probably don't know linemen, like linemen know linemen, you know. So like I looked up to Nick my entire life because and mostly, and I can tell you specifically why. I remember he used to make the fantasy roster on Madden. Yeah. And you could just give like you pick any – well, he was only like 24, 25, but he was good. So he was like my long-term center. I used to grab him all the time, because I was like, oh, this dude's going to be the staple on the line. So like I was a big
– I didn't even think about that. Like, of course you've been gamers, played Madden forever, like transitioning from playing – you know, on the controller with these guys, actually being next to them on their team, that's got to be like a crazy experience.
Yeah. I'm talking straight starstruck for a minute. I had to remind myself for a hot minute. Like, I'll tell you the first person who really starstruck me. I got there and I was walking through the facility and Brandon Flowers was there. He was standing in, he had just signed there too. And I was like, B-Flow, that's Brandon. That's Brandon Flowers. And I just, oh man, I wanted to go ask for an autograph so bad. But I was like, we are professional. I'm supposed to be equal to
tone it down.
That normal, Craig. Get it together.
Mr. Flowers.
And so I had to avoid doing that. But like they were, you know, eventually a lot of the dudes, man, guys are very humble. That's one thing I thought you'd get big timed a lot. Philip Rivers is one of the most salt of the earth people. Like, when I talk about a perception, like a bad perception of somebody that was changed, he is the epitome of that example. I thought he was a whiny, crying dude who just couldn't. Like, you only get this, you see him talking to the refs and you just think he's like this, you know, prima donna.
Yeah.
Nicest dude in the world, knows everyone on the team, talks to, like, will talk to you first. You know, he's not like one of those people who's like, you know, he only speaks back. No, he asks you how your day is.
Right.
You know, he knows about where you're from. Like, the guy is a genuinely good dude. And, but it was like,
you know, we got whooped by like Travis our senior year.
He's like, I seen the game.
I heard down in Texas, y'all got stomped a mud hole stomped by the Cavaliers. And, but yeah, there was, I mean, it was interesting being around guys like, you know, like King Dunlap. I watched him on Monday Night Football, like, the year before, being like, oh, okay, I see this guy. I'm like, oh, crap, we're in a meeting room together now? You mean I got to go get you lunch? All right, I'm happy to go get you lunch. No worries, man. You know, so it was those things were very interesting in the transition, trying to fit in and not just be like a kid who's on a make-a-wish trip all the time. Like, man, I'm just glad to be here. You know?
So you talked about your, like, kind of fanboy moment. What is a moment that you will never forget, like the craziest NFL story you've been in the league?
Oh man. There's tons. But there's too many stories to tell. I will
the
say
bro code of the NFL, like some stuff you got to keep, you know.
None that are getting me in trouble.
There's a line. Yeah. There's a line that you don't cross.
Yeah. I'm not going to tell you about people who I think poorly of and nothing like that, but like,
Of course.
There are a couple, see, it's on the spot. I'm not going to produce a great one, but I will say there's two things. One, being able to work with the community for me was always a very, very, very rewarding. And like, that was the thing that I think I enjoyed the most was like, so every Monday is your off day in the league, right? Because, Tuesday's your off day. Monday's your recovery day. Tuesday's your off day. Wednesday's the start of a new work week. And so on Tuesday is also your community relations day. And it's very, very hard to get guys to do community relations because most teams pay their guys. Like when I got to New York, they would pay you to go to an event. Like, you know, they might throw you a little bit of money to go do something. Other teams don't though. So San Diego they didn't pay anybody, but so they constantly needed people. And so I ended up becoming really good friends with the community organizer. In fact, he's a good friend of mine to this day. And, I would probably go at least every other week. I think I did 11 visits my rookie year, And that's the thing that I miss the most is like, you know, going to an elementary school, you know, presenting a check to somebody, you know, going to a, you know, a fundraising event for first responders, like things like that, you know, because you're, it's great. Like, it's fun, but I play a game, man. Like, I'm not actually changing no lives. Like, the only real effect I'm having on the world is bringing people together through the bond of what they love. But I can also use my time, my platform, and go, you know, talk to a kid who, you know, might not have that other resource. But I'll say one story that, that dawns on me is like, oh, man, I'm in the show now. We were I grew up a Ravens fan, right?
And we remember that.
So we played Baltimore. We played Baltimore in Baltimore my rookie year. Wow. And I wasn't on travel yet, but they brought me because they knew I was from the area. So they're like, hey, do you want to come? Like, and they're pretty good about doing that. Teams will, they'll typically, if they know you're from an area, they'll bring the guys who might not be traveling. So we go up to Baltimore, and I had never been to an NFL game before, like, you know, being a part of them. And so I've dreamed about going to M&T. So like we're in the stadium and I'm just like, wow. you know, like super happy to be there. And I'll never forget. It was their defense. We're on the field for offense and the defense is on the field. And I'm like just sitting on the bench. And I kind of like zoned out for like a minute. And another thing too, this adds to the story. Mm-hmm. It might not make sense, but it definitely factors in. San Diego had the worst infrastructure with like the sound system and the Jumbotron. So being in another stadium, I was like, man, they got cool technology. They got like I was like just off of my world. And it was like third down, lock it down. And like this like graphic came on of like this like jail cell like hits the thing. And then this chain, you know, the ticker around the stadium where like this chain mm-hmm. comes up and it's like
it'll go around.
And it's like loud and the sound's traveling with it. And I'm like,
surround sound.
And the chancellor is like, defense, defense. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, and my foot starts tapping. And I don't realize it. I'm like, defense. And I'm like, oh, I can't be cheering on. Craig, no. You are literally on the other team right now. You can't be doing this. And so I was like, please don't let no camera catch that. Because I'm not going to be able to explain that one away. Watch, what are you doing here cheering on the other team? Just getting cussed out in meetings the next day. And so that's that. The things like that, like, you know, travel and hanging out with the guys and, you know, things. Those are the memories, like, you know, that won't really ever leave. But, yeah, there's too many. But there's also equally as many negative ones. Like I said, I can tell you about all the times I was a 1259. Stay for another week. Y'all got to pay your boy. All right, cool. You know? So,
how was that like for your family? Like, you know, being a part of something that's so big, like in the world.
You know, I can only speculate, right? I've never really asked anyone in my family. I'm only the second person with any relation to me to go to school and college in a traditional manner, right? Like my dad, I'm one of three people that holds a degree in my family. I believe there may be one more, but I'm only the second one to go, you know, straight out of high school. I'm the first one to go play a sport. You know, I was the first one to you know, play, you know, in college at all. You know, actually like play.
Mm-hmm.
And then, to continue going, it just felt like, in a way, it almost felt like, gosh, it's going to sound bad, but football has always kind of been my thing.
Right.
You know, my family's been always very supportive of it. But as I said earlier, for me, football was getting along with, you know, guys and not getting beat up when I got to a new school. You know, it was, it was more than me wanting to just be like, I'm going to be in the NFL one day. Like this, there was literally not, I don't think I uttered that until like the week before draft day, you know, like that was not in the card. So I think for my family, it was more of like a roller coaster ride because I remember coming home from games in Killeen. And my mom being like, where were you? And I was like, Mom, we had a game. You know? And she's like, oh, well, did you play? And I'm like, yeah, I played the whole game. And like, not like she just like, she's just my mom. Like she's never was like, she's not a sport person. So for me, it was like the same kind of thing. So like, I was like, Mom, I got a scholarship offer. She's like, oh, that's cool. Like, you know, like, it's like, hey, Mom, a scout called me from the NFL today. Oh,
good
neat.
Job, man.
Are you having fun? Like, very it's good. Like, it was never, you know, it was never like, oh, this is, you know, you got to buckle down. We're going to get you a trainer. Like, it was always just like, are you having fun? Okay, keep going. Yeah. And it was, you know, we'll come support you. And so I'd say for them, it was like, you know, it was a like, whoa, okay, cool. We'll, you know, enjoy the ride too. But yeah, football for me was a very, very personal journey.
Yeah.
You know, it was a very me and my learning and quest through this life via sport.
And that's a dope, like, way you put that, because a lot of the times you see kids that are, should I say, young adults that make it to the league and it's been their life from like birth. Like, that's what I want to do. Their parents are into it. They're training. You weren't that way and you still ended up there. So that's dope.
Thank you, man. And you know, it's crazy. Like, you know, when I got the WT, we ended up having one of the things we were most proud of is our pro day. We had more scouts at our pro day than UT, Texas.
Wow.
Like we killed it that year. We had like 25 teams were at our pro day, and we had 8 guys.
Well, Texas ain't been good for a minute.
Yeah, so. That year they was off. That's just that. Sorry, Dane.
For my long run.
No.
Dane repping the Buckeyes, bro.
Oh, he
yeah.
He
I switched teams. I jumped ship, man. Look, that last game in a clean uniform versus, you know, that team that I would not speak of on the field that I love in the
door.
You
got beat at Daryl K. Royal and said, screw this whole team.
You know what's crazy?
I'm done with this. I took it off.
You were the last ones to play on the grass there.
Yeah.
Only after we played, they switched.
Oh, I remember that. Yep. Yeah. I remember that. That old slip and slide game with our nubbies. These dudes in quarter, they had inch long cleats.
Yes. I brought like 3 different pairs of cleats that game.
Yeah, we
exactly. Long ass cleats, like
old school cleats.
Old ass cleats from like the 80s, 90s, bro.
Hey, solid. They got the long spikes. But no, man, of that class though, of all the guys who made it, none of us were like guys. Like D2 schools are the Wild West of college. You wanna see some crazy things go down? Go to Division II because the rules are a lot different. And so you can get like when I signed, we had 78 guys signed as my freshman class. That doesn't include no sophomore, no junior, just 78 freshmen. So you get guys in there, half of them are like, I'm going to league. I should have been D1. Man, I'm going to be starting next year. Right? You get the whole gambit. But all the guys who made it were dudes who are like, look, I came here to go to school, play football along the way, and I'm just going to put my best foot forward at both of these things. And so I personally think that if it was my goal, I would have never made it. But because of just... You know, I, a mentor of mine said a phrase basically, which was, you shouldn't, you know, the quote is along the lines of the sentiments is, if your goal is to just acquire money and to be, you know, receive funds for some sort of task, well, then you will do so, but you'll never make the money you set out to make. But when you set out to perfect something, to be good at something, to simply master a goal and to refine a craft, compensation and reward will find its way. The money will follow if the product is good, right? And so it wasn't for me, I never thought like, I want to get to the NFL. It was, I want to just be as good as I can. I don't like letting people down, honestly. I think that's a big portion of why I never, like if I was a bench rider, I probably would have honestly quit. But because like at every point along the way, and don't get me wrong, like my own ego was in there too, but at every point along the way, it was like, I can't let these guys down. They need me. Like I'm a part of this team. Like we've done too much. Like I can't walk away from this stuff. You know? And so I think it was because of that head down, get to the next day, get to the next day, be better tomorrow, and not, okay, I got to do this to get, you know, way down there. I think that's the only reason it did work out, you know?
So, Craig, first met you, very smart guy, still a smart guy to this day. But just want to brag on you a little bit. Of course, of course. So you're right. You're like probably one of the first people. No, you were the first person I ever met that knew how to solve a Rubik's Cube.
Oh, okay? So
that was one of the first signs. I was like, okay, this dude's got, you know, like he's like one of these big brain individuals.
He's different.
Aside from the fact that he's an offensive lineman, like I knew he was smart. But there was this one particular time we were in psychology class, and you probably have no idea because there's probably so many other amazing smart moments that you've had. Okay, we're in psychology class, and the unit or the particular section we're talking about was like association. And Mr. Keynes put up on the board a series of numbers. It was like maybe 20 or so numbers. And numbers, he asked all of us. And he's
I remember this.
He said, you guys know, you know, what stands out to you about these numbers or something of that sort? And they're all just looking at it, staring at each other. It's like, what's going on? Then here comes Craig. And then shortly, you just start naming off maybe I'm not doing a good job of spelling this out. Okay. There is there are four numbers in a year, right? So 2021 is 2021. Every single number listed was a particular year in which the United States went to war with, you know, another entity. This man from memory listed off every single war because with the association of the numbers that are on board, it's just like everybody else is like, you know, like, but I'm like, as a, you know, history buff, I'm like, shit, this guy's impressive. Never seen anything like this. So my question is,
thank you, man.
I remember that's always stuck to me. Like anytime I see a large series of numbers, like I'm looking at a credit card or if I look at, you know, like a bank statement, I'm like, man, Yeah, exactly. So my question to you is like, when you got to the league, what was that moment that you realized one of your teammates was that cerebral? There was that intelligent, and you were like, man, I'm just in awe of this particular person.
Y'all ask the dopest questions. I got to say, man, I've done a number of interviews. People ask the most generic questions where it's just like, so how many calories do you eat a day? And you're like, what's your bench? I stopped maxing years ago, bro. But so there were two. One was the center quarterback relationship is extremely, extremely important, especially at the league, because the center is typically in charge of setting protection. And so that's when I realized, like, okay, all these dudes are pretty smart. It's like Nick Hardwick's ability to know protection, and for him and Phil, like, they know football. Like, it's going to take me a long time to get to the level where they know football. You know what I mean? Because, like, mm-hmm. It's just so fast where they would, you know, you could, like seeing the blitz come just by the defense that's out there is like some next level stuff. And Phil, so there's some called blitz pickups on the field, but there's also a blitz pickup meeting that happens like twice a week. And at least we did it in San Diego. I don't think we did it in New York, but it's just the linemen and the quarterbacks go in, and Phil would run the meeting, and, you know, he'd have his, like, you know, the little cowboy remote, you know, I don't have mine somewhere around here. And he'd just be in the meeting and he'd be like, okay, it's they got nickel. They're going to bring smoke 2-5 from the edge. What we got here? Richie? And he'll just talk to somebody, like one of the guys in the room. And Richie will be like, Richie, what you going to call here? And then Richie would be like, I think we're going to squeeze it. Okay, I like squeeze. And he knows everything. He knows everything. So he's like, hey, Dontrell, you see that there? We're going to have a little six. I will sit back on the six. And you know what? That guy, he's not coming. You know, they've been showing it. But I watched the Seattle game, and they only brought it one time, and it was obvious because they stacked. And it's like he knows everything. And so you get out there on the field, and it's just the exact same. You know, he's playing it in his mind. He's conducting the whole show. Yeah. And then, like, right when the clock's down to, like, two, you're like, bro, you're not going to – like, we're about to – and he's just, snap. And it was like, yo, this guy, I see why they pay this man this much money. Because – everything, like, when I'd be in a meeting room and I'd be like, okay, this all makes sense. all right. Okay. And then we get out there and I'm like, this looks nothing like what we talked about. And but for those guys, it would still crystallize. And so like just the speed of which they saw the game and stuff like that. And then I think another moment where I realized someone was like extremely smart was Dwight Freeney was there my rookie year in San Diego. And Dwight was he was at the end. He was getting old. Mm-hmm. And like he was really just a third down only kind of guy. But
get the quarterback.
I think he is probably one of the epitomes of what I learned greatness was. Because Dwight is an undersized lineman, but his technique was so impeccable. And I'm talking like you knew what was coming. He only had to spin or he was going to long arm bull you. Mm-hmm. Those are the only two things he ever was bringing. But he was so good off the three step and a five step spin that he just could alternate between those two and would still be pressure. And it was like that type of like I got into combat sports really big in the last few years. And so part of that, I think, is the cerebral game of going against mm-hmm. me and you, one person. It's very lineman-esque to me. And so I think for what I really admired about that is the genius to find a way to make your small arsenal this big, right? You're adapting it. You know, like if the only thing I got is this one right hand and you got everything else, but I can figure out a way to implement it 50 ways, versatile, right? That takes another level of knowledge. And so seeing guys like that, you know, knowing the game and knowing, you know, they're not just out there because they're physically gifted, they are, but they're also students of the game, you know, guys in there putting down crazy hours of film. And so, yeah, there's a lot of, another person, Fitzpatrick, is probably the smartest guy I've played with. That dude is a very, very, very smart individual.
Ryan Fitzpatrick?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Harvard educated.
He's an extremely smart individual. He's kind of the same way where it's like he knows what's gonna happen before it happens, you know, and that's very smart guys, man. So
that brings me back to like, you know, Dane and I talked a little bit about the draft coming up and you know, it seems like every year the quarterback topics are, you know, they're so microscopic. Like, of course, they got to have the networks breakdowns and all of that mentally and all the mm-hmm. how you talked about Phillip Rivers and breakdown. And I know they go over meetings, basically the quarterback is the coach.
So that's quite literally the best way to like. So, you know, I'm coaching now and, you know, getting into it and. I literally being a coach is just like being in the league, the amount of time, except you're not physically doing it. Yeah. And so like when you're like the league schedule, you're in meetings at least on average 4 hours a day, 4 or 5 hours a day. And you're just going, and that's like just alignment, right? Linemen are always going to be a higher meeting group because there's five of us to watch stuff over. But when we leave, the quarterbacks were generally still there, you know, mm-hmm. And it's intense, man. Like, the amount of film study and it's because it's all situational, you know? So if you have your installs, right? Like the biggest thing for quarterbacks is they have to know the proper check. So they really do have to be like coaches on the field, right? So they'll call the play, but if they're like, hey, if you see this look, what should we do? Because we can't tell you, so you need to know what to do. And that's...
Yeah, because you're going to be out there.
Yeah, right. You know, and there's no way to communicate it, right? We can only call in so many plays from the sideline, right? You know, it is wild how minute... it's funny you said the draft. I can't stop thinking about the draft because the draft has changed so much in my life just from, like, I remember that 02 Miami Hurricane team with, like, Willis McGahee?
Stacked.
Yes. Yeah. I remember watching that draft and being like, look at all my favorite players going to teams. I can't look at the, like, you know, at the draft when you're there, man, after, first off, the draft you're in is stressful, but then the ones after that, the worst day on earth.
Oh, you know what? Yeah.
Don't you didn't think about it nowadays. Yeah. Yep.
Exactly.
It's horrifying. everyone's excited about the draft. And, like, usually the team has a draft party. Like, hey, come on to the draft party. And, like, you better not select a lineman first and I'll come. Like, because you know somebody, some position group is going to be distraught that night.
Yeah,
because they're bringing in somebody to play immediately. So, like, I remember my first year in New York, we got D. Lee from Ohio State as a linebacker. And I remember just being like, don't take a lineman. And they selected a linebacker. And I was at a party with our starting linebacker. And I was not paying attention. I was like, yeah! Because I was like so happy. And I look over and I'm like, sorry, David. Don't worry, dog. It's going to be both of y'all. Y'all going to be.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's like, it's a completely, every round you're just like, just no lineman. No lineman. Yeah. Okay, in the six, we'll take six. I can battle a six rounder. He ain't had that much more, you know. But yeah, it's a completely different experience because even if it's not your position, it's a friend's, you know. And so, you know, you pick up receiver in the first round and you're homie the receiver. You're like, hey, it's all right, man. It, you know, keep running.
Yeah, you good, bro. You good. Just keep balling. Do you.
So
it's crazy, man.
Yeah, there's a million of those little ones where you're like, oh, crap, this isn't like I thought it would be. Oh, man, this is way better when in theory, you know, because you think, oh, it's a team. It's a team. No, I don't know that guy. He's taking my friend's job away, you know.
Yeah, that's tough. Like, you spoke to us about just the limited amount of space or limited amount of contracts the team can have. And even when you were arriving to be at the hotel and, you know, the roommate was like, you're the new Ian. Is there any type of, now looking back on it, is there any type of survivor's remorse that exists when you know that you're still here, but of course somebody else that, you know, might have been fighting much harder than you in a different position is no longer here? Like, how does that mentally, how does that affect you? Like, as a, you know, you're obviously a very caring, humble guy, but it's like at some point it kind of just, I have to think about this, you know, gone just like that.
Man, y'all really are the OGs with these questions. But,
hey, that's, bro, we 40 episodes in the game. We basically pros.
Well, they're deep. They're deep. They're, you know,
it's an inception level question.
Appreciate that.
They
man.
Really are, man. Like, that's actually something I did struggle with at first. Like, I'm not, like, this is gonna sound weird, but like, I wore Ian's, like, he had left behind a compression shirt, and I wore it for like a month just because I was like, I like this is all the show for this man's whole career, you know? Because that's the thing too that I think sometimes gets mixed up is like, you know, I'm just gonna get a little bit off into the weeds, but like,
you good?
When you're going through it, you don't have time to be appreciative of anything, you know? Like it used to make me so mad. Like, so, you know, I've been cut a few times, you know, but like, you get cut, even if you know you're getting signed back, right? Or, you know, let's say like, you know, something happens where you're fearing you might get cut. People will hit you with like the, hey, well, at least you made a team. Like, that's cool. That doesn't do that. That is almost counterproductive in those moments. Cause you're like, what good does it do me to make it to the NFL and not do it? Like not even get a game, you know, never suit up. Right. And so when you hear people say like, you know, at least you got there, like, all right. Like that's like me going to Burger King with people who are standing outside hungry. And I'm like, well, you made it to the door. Like, I don't got any food still, you know? And it's
speaking
kind
of Burger King, Craig, remember we used to always go to Burger King.
Them double and triple stackers.
All those lunch breaks in high school. Oh,
I think.
Race to the front seat.
Hey, man, somebody got to drive because you know I wasn't pushing no whip. But,
freaking time.
Yeah, man. Batman, remember when they built bushes and we just walk over there now?
Man.
But yeah, that was talking about the remorse and all. It's like you feel some kind of way because you realize, oh, that's what I was saying about the amount of time people get in, you know, like that guy played a whole career just like myself, right? Like the way I see it is I had over like 40 starts. I had no career sacks, was a 2-year captain, was an All-American. I had to do all of this stuff to get a tryout. So the way I see it is all of that almost got squandered. Same thing for this dude. My man's went to Boston College, Power 5 conference, and had to obviously get enough playing time to put enough film. So he probably was at least a 1-year starter. Might have been 2 years, you know. So my man's had already done the, you know, very high-level stuff, and his career was over in, he had 9 days under contract maybe, you know. And the same way where my emotions went, okay, it's draft day. You're not getting first round. Don't even just enjoy the day. Day two, you ain't getting drafted either. Just keep hanging out. Day three, though, nervous. Nowhere to go. Oh, no. Oh, no. What? Little tryout offer? Okay. Okay.
Right.
Oh, I got signed? His is the exact opposite. Draft day. Okay, I'm not getting drafted. Free agent offer? I have a contract. Nah, I'm going to go out there in the preseason. I'm going to bust it open. Like, this my shot. Random dude they like at a mini camp who was there only to fill in rosters is now taking my job. No one's calling after that, you know? Mm-hmm. And so there is a huge level of, I like the words you put, survivor's remorse, but it's also like you feel lucky that it's not me, because I could easily be that statistic, you know? We call them the Reapers. The Reapers are guys whose like job, they're the ones you see when they, hey, coach needs to see you with your playbook. You know? And you know exactly who they are. And like, so if you see them coming, you're like,
yeah.
Avoid them at all costs.
You know, if you don't ever watch Hard Knocks, Craig,
are they on there? Are they
point at those guys?
Yeah.
Get your playbook. You coach wants
like,
to see you.
I actually, 1 year, I finally got like, this is like my third year when I was like, all right, even if I get cut, you know what, whatever, I've made it past the point I thought I'd be here anyway. Like, I had finally gotten so tired of being anxious. I was like, whatever happens, happens. You know, I finally was like, hey, man, do you feel the energy of everyone avoiding you all the time? And he was like, I hate it. I hate it so much. And he was like, so he got so serious. He was like, I don't like that I have to do that. Like, it's my job, but like everyone treats me like I'm a leper, you know, like I don't want to do that, but it's part of it. And it's, you can only have, you can only go so many times to the weight room, work out, and be like, hey, what you doing the rest of the day? All right. Hey, you know what? Okay, I'm going to go back to the room. Hey, let's go to the movies. Hey, where you at? I got cut, man. I'm on the way home. Like, there's only so many times you make plans that fall through because the homie got fired before you just like kind of keep your head down and just hope it's not you, you know? And so, yeah, there's that survivor's remorse, but also that sense of like, it wins the next one, you know? And that to me was always a very, like, there's a number of things I've always said in my career were daunting propositions. Being in the circuit was one of them, you know, just hoping someone will call you, going out for a tryout, flying home, just waiting, you know? Like, I don't know how it would have dealt, like, coming back from, like, a season-ending injury. Like, that's another thing I'm like, I don't know if I had to resolve for that, like, you know, blowing a knee out and coming back. So there's a number of things, man, where it's like, in hindsight, you're like, wow, that was a bit of a ordeal. But you know, it's part of the territory. You know, it's high level for a reason, and part of that's a revolving door. But yeah, to wrap it up, to keep myself from stammering here too long, it's yeah, you definitely have a sense of zero sum mentality. You know, for every inch forward I take, it by definition is an inch back someone else takes, you know.
Yeah.
But you better than me.
You segue perfectly into my next question, because, you know, NFL obviously stands for National Football League, but also stands for not for long.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's not long for everybody. You get those opportunities here and there, stay a few years. Of course, you're fortunate enough to stay a number of years, but Dane and I have talked about this a lot on our episodes. A lot of guys don't know what to do after transitioning.
Mm-hmm.
After it. It's a wrap for me.
Yeah.
a lot of the guys don't know what to do because all their life they know football. That's it. And so coming, and you were talking about it earlier in this episode with you, like football, it was always more than football. And so you really didn't see it as my all end all kind of thing.
Yeah.
Transitioning from NFL to next steps in your career. How was that?
Man, that's actually something that I'm like finally actualizing now in real life. Again, another great question, guys. Y'all are, man. I quite similarly, but for a different reason, was lost as well. I had no clue what I wanted to do because for me, so remember when I told you I left school, I was actually on track to accept a internship to work for the congressman of the district of which West Texas is in, is Congressman Thornberry. And I was going to like get into politics and like it's a great internship. And so I was going to try to go work out of the D.C. office, get my foot in the door and do that. And I remember getting the offer to come train in Phoenix and being like, I would rather I can go back to school. I always believed in myself mentally. I always believed that I could figure it out academically. But I didn't want to ever be Booby Miles. I refused to be. Yeah. You know, man, if I would have just like regret to me is worse. There's a quote I used to be in the Chargers weight room, and it's so perfect. It's like, what is worse, the pain of hard work or the pain of regret? And that to me is such a resonating thing. It's like you can't undo it. You can't undo that time. So I'd rather have squandered my schooling, tried to pursue a dream, failed and built it back rather than to have gone that route and gone, what if, you know? And it wasn't the most sound choice, to be honest, you know, it really wasn't. But when I made it and as it panned out, I remember just thinking, well, this is cool. I guess I'll just delay being an adult now. Cause like, you know, similarly too, like, you know, y'all knew me back when I was, you know, high school, I had a fade, right? I didn't have dreads back in school. So I started growing my hair once I got out of the house because my military parents were like, you do whatever you want. You don't live here. And yeah. So what happened was I got up the canyon and I couldn't find a barber that I trusted. So I just ended up having an afro.
Very important.
And I was like, I was like, well, I was like, this afro thing's kind of cool, but it's annoying to pick. So then I ended up being like, I'll twist my hair. And then I kept growing my hair. And then I was like, well, dreads are cool. I'll cut my hair when I have to get a real job. So I just thought that would be at the end of college.
Yeah.
And then I ended up going professional. So I was like, well, I guess I don't have to. So I literally was just like kind of like, I felt like I was on an extended childhood, you know, like I was a grown man, like a taxpaying citizen and all, but like, I don't have the struggles that I thought I would anticipate with leaving college, you know, like life is just, it's different right now. And so once I always knew that it would end, you know, but I just knew like for now I'm just on pause. I literally just felt like it was a life pause. So when it ended, I was like, okay, what do you want to do? Because here's the kicker with the whole pausing life thing. Chris Rock has that great joke where he's like, you know what the difference between someone who dropped out in 11th grade is and someone who dropped out in the third grade is? The person who dropped out in 11th grade has 8 years of work experience over you, right? And it's because functionally not graduating is not graduating. It doesn't matter if you dropped out with a first grade education or 11th grade in 9 months. Quite similarly, it doesn't matter that I was in the NFL for the last 3.5 years. I don't have work experience that's tangible to a real job.
Hey, I was in the league.
Yeah, like, yeah, that, exactly. Like, my resume is so stupid. My resume is ridiculous. It literally says, like it's like peer leader at during college, then San Diego Chargers the next thing. No other work history. It's like, who's your supervisor? Mike McCoy? Like, I don't know what to tell you, you know? And so it's like, it's good. Just like that, it's like, I don't technically have tangible skills. So you're almost set back further by playing professionally because you're squandering time you could be building in another field. And I say squander loosely to simply say that it's not being spent in that capacity.
Lost time, yeah.
Right. And so And so it was for a minute, like I took a year off of just everything. And I just was like, I had always described myself as Craig who plays football, not Craig the football player. And so it was quite similarly, it was like, I have far more aspects to my personality and life than just being this dude on the field. And so I just took a year to, like, you know, enjoy life. Like, I went hiking a lot, you know, just enjoyed, you know, other sports. That's when I got really big into the UFC. And then eventually I was like, okay, I need to figure something out. And it was a struggle, man. It really was. I went into the only thing I had experience with, which was education. And so I started working at a college, and then I realized, and this is funny, it's like circling it all back, is like, I was done with football. I was content with never watching a game. Like, I don't have NFL alerts on my phone. Like, I was content with, I didn't watch a draft. I couldn't tell you who was in the playoffs. Like, I was genuinely living my life. And I was, like, just done with ball. Not in, like, a bitter way, but I was like, I've been so focused on this thing that I'm an expert at it. I don't need, and you don't watch the game the same anymore, right? Like, I only can see the line play. I only can see the box when I'm playing. Like, there's no long completion. It's like, oh, there was a missed block, and then luckily we got the play. You know, that's just how I see the game. And so I was just very done with the sport. And then when I was living in Phoenix, this before, you know, I'll say I moved, the junior college had shut down their football program. And all the kids didn't have anywhere to really play. So some of the coaches started up this, like, prep league, basically, just an attempt to get these kids film. And they were like, hey, can you coach? And I was like, I mean, I feel bad saying no. Mm-hmm. Like these kids that don't have anyone else, like, fine, I'll go. And then, man, I found myself being like, I got to get out of here. I got to go to practice. You know, like, being like, invested in these guys, you know, like spending money, like, you know, making sure they had food, like, hey, you know, because they were from some bad situation, you know, like giving them ride, like taking time out of my day. And I'm like, well, I don't know these kids. I'm not even paying. Y'all ain't paying me. Like, I'm out here doing the most volunteering. And I was like, yo, maybe this coaching thing is something I might like. And I, man, I love it, man. It's so, like, it is, it honestly feels like my entire, I feel like what I think being a father will feel like, where you're like, oh, this is what it was all for.
Yeah.
You know, like, I feel like my entire career for myself is only led me to pass knowledge on to the next generation. You know, like, I was an okay player, but I think that I'll be 10 times the coach that I was as a player. And it's crazy to be like, I was struggling to find, like, I refuse to be unhappy in this life. And so for a while, I was like, I don't know what I want to do. Like, one transition that was hard leaving the league was, if there is a confrontation in the locker room, we're going to settle it. And I'm not saying it's going to get violent, but men talk to men. Like, we got to figure out how we're going to get through this issue. The corporate world, you have to be so like, well, let's have a meeting, perhaps a plan. And the inability to just be direct and to get things done, I couldn't. I was like, all right, I'm not long for this world, you know?
Right.
And so I was like, okay. And luckily, my old coach had a position come open, and they were like, he's been trying to get me to get into coaching for some time. But it's before I realized I wanted to do it. And it just, like, worked out perfectly. And I was like, yeah, man, I'm about that life. And so, yeah, it's been great. It's like every, like, I enjoy, like, I look forward, like, every day for like 10 years, I woke up with butterflies because I knew I'd have to go run or I'd have to lift weights. Something was going to be very uncomfortable that day.
Every athlete's been there.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It's just like something, you know, so every day it's just like, but now I wake up and I'm like, oh, we have practice today. This is going to be fun. I hated hearing one-on-ones. Now I hear one-on-ones and I'm like,
everybody on the line.
Let's go.
Yeah, man. So it's crazy. It's like, you know, I struggled a lot to find something that I thought would give me purpose and that I would enjoy. And I'm fortunate that I kind of, I don't want to say stumbled into it, but realized that this is where I'm happy. This is where I can do all the things that I feel like are what life is about, you know, affecting your community, making change, you know, mentoring the men of the future. Because it's like, I had the fortune of having great coaches my whole life. And there's nothing worse to me than seeing a guy be derailed on his career because of incompetency.
Yeah.
You know, that to me is a crime to have a guy working his ass off, doing the most, trying to make it in this world, which is tough as it is. And you being lazy or just like, just block him. Like, no, give the man some direction, help him, like, you know, be a mentor, be the guiding light to help somebody. Cause when you were in that position, someone helped you, you know?
Right.
So I had the great fortune of having people who looked out for me and people who had my best interest in mind. And it's only right that you, you know, return that favor, you know? It's like a parallel to like civil rights to me, where it's like, all right, it's better than it was, but if my grandparents were quiet, where would my rights be? You know? So quite the same. It's like, yeah. I can't be entitled to just only, you know, absorb and not to give back.
That makes sense. I know we put a lot of promotional stuff out with the graphics of where you've been and where you are now. But for the people that didn't see it, what role are you in now and what's your day-to-day look like?
Yeah, so I have accepted the graduate assistant, the offensive graduate assistant job here at the University of Nevada.
Let's go!
Let's go, Wolfpack! But I'm functionally, so every team in FBS gets, you get two GAs on each side of the ball. And GAs are coaches. So I am the assistant O-line coach here, along with Coach Best, who was actually my O-line coach in college. And so day-to-day operations, like I'm actually here right now. I'm go out with the guys, you know, help coach. Then when we come in, break down film, grade tape. My big assignment right now, I've got to do the personnel breakdown. We open our season this year with Cal. And so I've got to, you know, get the pressure packages, you know, figure out all of the, you know, what they do on down and distances, you know, get all the cut-ups, understand the D linemen, what their moves are, tendencies, you know, stats, all of the things that go into preparation for an opponent. And then just, you know, I think another role, this isn't necessarily my official description, but being a GA for me is like being a junior, it's like being a between coach and coach, right? Like I am a coach. Like I am very blessed here that I get a lot of respect. I get a lot of deference to my expertise. You know, they treat me very well here, but at the same time, I'm not too far removed where I don't understand the mental things my guys are going through, you know, seeing them beat themselves up and, you know, okay, well, coach played this guy this many reps today. Does that mean, like, you know, and trying to help them through those struggles.
Because you've been through
that for me, I think. Yeah, yeah. And I know how detrimental it can be to be your own, you know, mind monkey. And so, you know, helping the guys just, you know, through navigating school and trying to balance their life, like all of that stuff for me is something that I take, you know, a lot of pride in this position. And so, yeah, man, it's great. Like I'm probably in here like 12 hours a day, you know, but I'm cool with it because for me, it's about learning. Like if I would have coached, let's say I got hurt and then would have like coached and then gone back to play, I'd be an all pro.
Yeah.
I've learned more coaching than I did because it's just so much more in order to tell someone else how to do it. You're like,
you got to know how to do it.
Got to know 3-4 times as well.
Yeah. Man. And so like the, just being that much more, you know, granular with the material is something that I'm super happy about. Like I'm just ready to this summer grind and, you know, watch tape and, you know, like learn coverages. Like, I actually want to be able to tell when someone's rolling into cover three, right? Mm-hmm. They're disguising cover two.
Get your Philip Rivers on.
Oh man, yeah, I'm trying to be out there because like that's the thing is like being a really good coach is, you know, knowing the game, right? And we will win ball games if I'm in the, if I'm able to immediately go, hey, no, this is what the look is. It's this pressure, rather than like, coach, I don't know what's happening, right? Yeah. Like, that's how you lose ball games. And so, you know, we have a great team. We've got 10 of our 11 starters on offense back. We only lost, you know, one guy. We've got a bunch of guys who are likely to be in the draft class this next year. There's a lot of talent here. And so I want to contribute as much as I can to win the Mountain West this year. Like, that's my goal, is to get a ring. I have one ring. I should have two, but I lost it. And so I need new rings. And so I need to go get some rings.
For sure, bro. Man, first of all, like I said, thank you so much, man, for, you know, taking the time out of your schedule to, finally get you in here, man. And I know Dane would agree with me, bro. We're so proud of you and the things that you're doing now, knowing you since high school and, you know, from the Left 4 Dead parties, lunchtime, you know. Yeah, going to lunch. Lunch breaks.
Look, calling his name and ducking out. Used to be like, Craig. And he was like, hey, guys, don't call my name unless you're going to say anything.
Yeah. Used to mess with Craig. But man, truly from the bottom of my heart. And, you know, we're so proud of you, man. And because of a lot of the times, you know, people aren't as level-headed, and as long as I've known you, man, you've always been that level-headed guy, practical, know what you want, and just go get it. And so for you to be in this position you are now, man, is truly, we're truly, truly proud of you, man.
Hey, man, I honestly, you about to make me cry. I thank you guys, man. For real, it's like, I want to thank you guys, man. It's like, you guys have always been, you never acted weird when things, you know, were getting up there, you know, you're always supportive. You've always been able to communicate with both of you. You've never changed, and you guys have always been very, very near dear friends to me. So I thank you guys for, you know, being yourselves. And you know, it's one thing you learn when you're going through it is I'm not saying like, I by no means I'm going to be like, people's true colors show when they,
when you start getting money, don't change.
Yeah.
You get this guap. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you just see like this, man, it's funny. Like, you see people's like, don't get me wrong, I'm retired now, but like, I'm still a big dude and I still have long hair. So like, people are always like, well, what do you do?
What do you mean, boy?
Right. And so, and you want to avoid it, but then once, if for some reason it ever gets to football, you can literally see their eyeballs go like, now all we're going to talk about is football.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's like, you know, and it's honestly like the most blessing to have, you know, especially homies from the old school who are like, you know, same old dudes, you know, they knew me when I was the goofy dude who wore a blue raincoat every day.
Yeah.
Just because that was my thing. Yeah, particularly that freshman year.
Yeah, Coach Gay's class, science together.
Yeah.
Hey, remember the kid? Somebody stole his Game Boy or whatever. What was that?
Oh, yeah. Hey, in biology with Coach Gay. I'll never forget. That's the quote I was about to say. You're just gonna let them leave. We can't keep them, James. His name was James. I'll never forget.
Oh, quick story for the audience. We're all in class, and the kid thought somebody stole his.
It was finals. It was the last finals of the day.
And we weren't going to be in that class anymore, and he lost his PSP or something.
Yeah.
It was a PSP.
It was a PSP. Okay. Yeah.
So he lost his PSP, or somebody took it, or something. We don't know.
He said Game Boy.
There was a light-skinned guy in the class who was real bad. And he kept, I can't remember who it was though, but he was real loud and he thought it was him. And, but yeah, as you were saying.
Yeah. So he lost his PSP and we weren't going to be in that class anymore, summer, whatever. And he asked the coach, who was the teacher, Coach Gay, he asked them to basically frisk everybody in their equipment or their bags before we left. And then did we even do that? I think it was just like, bro.
Half the people had started walking out already. And Coach Gay literally was like, I can't stop it. I can't do that. Like,
stopping frisks in New York.
That's violating civil rights. I can't just start patting kids.
He was so upset. And then the famous quote that you still say, "You're just going to let them leave." And we left.
Oh, man, bro, that's legitimately been 15 crazy years. And that quote still hits me like
Dane and I recited like all the time.
Pray to God that boy don't see this podcast. He's got all three. Oh, man.
Yeah,
list.
He don't come for all of us.
That's for sure.
He don't come for all of us. James, sure. Just so you know, we advocated the search.
Yeah,
just,
we didn't. It was not us. Yeah. Every time we have a guest, we like to give them the opportunity to say some last words, words of encouragement, advice, anything like that to our listeners.
Oh, man.
No pressure.
Oh, man. Hey, I would say, first off, thank you guys for letting me on, having me on. I had a blast. It's always great to chop up. Even if I need to come down Central Texas way. We need to all get together.
Yeah, last time you came, you texted me that you're going to be here. I think I was in Dallas or something.
Yeah, you were out of town for something, but I'll be around there soon again. Yeah. I would say, man, the only thing is to be, you know, everyone, love you, everyone, you know, we are not here long enough to hold grudges, to have animosity. This world is hard enough as it is. And so there's no, hey, I always say that today is April 24th, 2021. There's not a handbook. There's not a guide for April 25th, 2021. The only thing we can do is try to be our best with the unforeseen and to put our best foot forward. And don't beat yourself up too hard. You're going to fail. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to trip. But you can't think that not hitting the target on the first goal is an indictment. Yeah, just simply that, you know, put your best foot forward. And you're going to fail. You're going to trip. You're going to stumble. You're going to be embarrassed. You're not going to think you know the way, but we all don't know the way. And if we can collectively agree that we're all trying to figure this out, there's peace and solace in being lost. There is a comfort in being in the collective confusion. And so understand that you're not perfect, but we should still try.
Couldn't have said it better, my guy. Thank you so much, my guy, for joining us. And for the listeners, thank you for listening to this jam-packed, informative, lit, on fire episode of the Duo Sports and Stuff podcast. Don't forget, you can follow us on our socials, Duo SNS Podcast. Listen to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or our website, www.theduosportsandstuffpodcast.com.
Peace.